Let them, like a firing squad, fire obediently into the helpless body of their effect. In short, Lou must have wanted to give me the sack for some time. For a considerable spell, she must have been setting her sights on a new neighborhood. Some months back, who knows exactly when, she must have decided I had a loathsome mind. Even when we lay together like cream cheese on a bagel, the idea had to have been forming. Oh, shitty suspicion, crapulous thought. But that's it. Causes collect like waste in the bowels of history. History is horse drop. Who says I have a loathsome mind? Who dares to say so? And every event then is somebody's, something's plop. History has an asshole, culp old man, I shall say to him tomorrow. And the present is its most immediate relief. Culp will make a glad, sad, consecrated, grateful, forlorn face, which resembles the one I make for him, except that it will have a scoutmaster's kindness in it. The future is a fart, then, which heralds every movement, every new break of day. A nun went to bed with Herr Hitler, whose cock just got littler and littler. "Oh, what I would do if you was a Jew," he cried as he bit her and hit her. I recite for Culp a limerick about a young man from Perugia, but he will have none of it. Ach, that Niger-Tiger stuff is disgusting. Amateurs amble over everything like cows. You get a line like, "And his cock, when he came, cried out, Ooga," and you know right away the kid is going to come from Chattanooga. Where's the challenge, the inner art, the deep design? Culp, I tell him, using a juridical tone, "Your character doesn't compose. Here you are, beating the tom-tom for the American Indian as if every one of them were running for public office. You're boosting the simple life with all the zeal of a small-town chamber of commerce. You're eating right, sleeping well, breathing evenly, thinking with your cleverly opposed thumbs, getting up early in the a.m., taking long hikes, keeping your prepuce loose, living like a scout. Yet at the same time, you're spending God knows how many hours trying to figure out what ass-flatulent word you can rhyme with Hitler and Hannibal and Uga, and making mechanical sounds with your tongue, lips, teeth, and through your nose as though it were another mouth. Jeez, Culp, those infantile puns of yours, those childish quips, your adolescent verses, there's nothing natural about them, nothing savage. They're contrivances, artificialities, cuckoo clocks. You've seen the stuff piled up in roadside stands, stacked up in stores, in countless catalogs, the world of walnut bowls and ceramic ducks, the shit of civilization. It's not the kind of waste you kick a few leaves over and hope to hide. It's embroidered turds and smelly stools of styrofoam and steel, crocks of cheese soaked in pork piss. You can't even hold this stuff, wipe it away with a page of Monkey Ward's, whose catalog contains more. It's mind-mared. It is Chaucer, chewed into learned multilingual notes, the spitballs of scholarship. It's the Spencerian Society meeting over biscuits and sherry. It is facts stuck like gull droppings to the sides of history, the guana of the learned professions. It's copping a feel for Flaubert. Culp begins softly to sing Yiddisha Eyes. Knickknacks like yours shall overcome, shall inherit the earth. Think of the crossword puzzle, for Christ's sake. The comic strip, the joke book, the movie magazine, the almanac, the graffiti chiseled in lintels, the whole air swept and shaken by storms of insipid conversation. In any well-run society, alliteration would be a hanging offense. Culp hands me what he claims is his business card. One side reads like this: Charles Culp Enterprises Limited. Rhymes for ritual occasions. Birthdays, baptisms, christenings, confirmations, weddings, holidays, anniversaries, unctions, others. Listen, Culp says, we really agree, caller. You and I, we're one. Don't groan and make that frog's face. That's the great aim of all these splendid things. Led on by the limerick, their true leader, and like the Fuhrer, their destroyer. What is this aim, you ask? He says, giving me the finger. To ranchify, to suburb everything, to pollute the pollutants, explode the exploded, trash the trash. It sends back that annunciatory light and returns us to the Virgin. Call the limerick is the unrefiner's fire. It is as false and lifeless, as anonymous as a rubber snake. It is the dildo of desire. No one ever found a thought in one. No one ever found a helpful hint concerning life, a consoling sense. The feelings it harbors are the cold, bitter, dry ones: scorn, contempt, disdain, disgust. Yet nothing is more civilized than this simple form. In that, in cultural sophistication, it is the equal of the heroic couplet. Could Benin with its bronzes have produced it? Could the Mayans, the Greeks even, or foully glorious Aristophanes? No. Only old England in the raped richness of its colonies, in its wide furorship of the waves. But this high point, you must realize, is a low blow. That's the lesson of the limerick. It is all surface, a modern shape, a model's body. There's no inside, however long or far you travel on it, no within, no deep. So it does not merely show, you see, it shows up. It forces you to face the facts without ever producing any. The noble savage does not know disgust. He does not vomit his heart out into his head. I once went to bed with a nun. There's little else left of that Italianate church. I've turned his card over with a hand I assert is steady as a date. I'm trying to read it while Culp rattles on and on into something like a song. I once went to bed with a nun to screw every way it was done. Though it was awkward, we first did it backward. We went round and round, even fucked upside down. In position so weird, my head hasn't cleared, and my testicles haven't been found. I hand him back his card, which he slips into his jacket pocket with a smooth whistling sound, which signifies the sneak's speed. Satisfaction is written all over him. A few Christmases ago, he gave me a large sack, such as Santa might carry. Stenciled darkly on it were the words, "It's in" on one side, and "the bag" on the other. And I feel that somehow I have been holding it ever since. According to Culp, it is the very sack which Rigoletto used to shoulder off his mismurdered daughter. After the ball is over, I say to him, we have this little game. One of us confronts the other suddenly with a song title like, "Can't you hear me calling Caroline?" The victim must then produce on the spot a pun which sums it up, which reduces it, which is an appropriate commentary. There's little latitude, but not much. After the ball is over, I say to Culp. He hesitates. After the ball is over, I repeat in a mean voice, like a movie thug. It's a fait accompli, Culp replies solemnly. And I lose again, as I have lost so often, bitterly, badly. He makes the chalk one up sign. He racks the balls. He powders his cue. The kids should be in uniform for the meeting tonight, he reminds me as he prepares to depart. And that includes the sash with the badges. I am indeed a dad. Was that why Lou left me? Because I was too little or too large a dad? The sack, Culp, I asked him, what am I supposed to put in it? Fortunes. From, you know, those cookies. I'm filling mine with fortunes. Ones I've written. They're dillies. They rhyme. I don't know how to respond. But boy, do I hate the Boy Scouts. Thank you very much for your attention.